The Iowa Art Showcase is coming to you from Luther College's Center for Life and Faith. I'm Jacqueline Hoblum, and joining us is Andrew Whitfield, Associate Professor of Music and Coordinator of Opera, the Music Department Head and Director of Orchestral Activities, Dan Baldwin, Nicholas Schenefeld, Assistant Professor of Music and Collaborative Piano, and Carla Hansen, Luther Voice Faculty and Assisting Opera Director. Before we get into the opera, give us a brief synopsis of opera on the campus of Luther.
Opera at Luther is an important part of the curriculum. We have a course each semester devoted to opera production. In the spring semester, it's our full production, what we're working on right now. In January term, we have a course just for first-year students exploring opera, usually for the first time. It's an introduction to that course. They produce a small opera scenes program. And then in the fall semester each year, we do, for upper-class students, a program of opera scenes. So each semester, there's a way for students to explore their love, get to know more of the repertoire, and hopefully grow in their performances and performance experiences as well.
Why are opera programs important?
Well, I will quote my colleague over here, Dr. Baldwin, our conductor, talks about how much he loves opera, directing opera, conducting it, bringing it all together. And I would say why it's an important part of our curriculum is it really is a collaboration of so many people on campus, student efforts, faculty efforts, staff efforts. I think it shows the best of what we have to do collaboratively as artists. It takes extended concentration. What you see in the final product is a labor of love from many, many, many people. And that is inspiring to me. It comes always at a time in the semester when we're all very tired and can think about maybe being close to being done. But that's why I'm inspired by our conductor, who always takes great energy from that week and is always excited about this process. So that reminds me that is a very important labor of love.
Anybody who's ever been involved in opera will know, in my view, it makes everything else we do seem simple by comparison. It makes simple orchestral performance, symphonic performance, sitting on a stage in one place and performing even a difficult work, it makes it seem by comparison quite simple. Opera is like three-dimensional chess. It's, you know, the orchestra in the pit, and tempos are constantly changing, and the singers are on the stage 8 or 10 feet above our heads and sometimes 25 feet horizontally away, and they're all performing from memory and in languages, and it's a very challenging, it makes great demands on the conductor, on the orchestra, on the singers, on everybody, on the directors, the costumers. It makes demands, and it pushes us in ways that what we do the rest of the year. It's a great opportunity for me every once in a while to sort of clean up my technique and to take a fresh look at what I'm doing on the podium and why and how I could do it better. It's also great fun. We enjoy it.
So I think the marriage of the voices and the pit orchestra and the technical aspects from everything from the set design to the lighting design, to the costume design, it's all a perfect marriage that comes together that has, it's celebratory, really, when it all comes together, and it's very exciting.
I think that this is important for the curriculum because it's an all-hands-on-deck approach. Throughout the semester, we've involved not only the singers, but we've involved theatrical people as well. We've involved pianists in the department who are playing the orchestral reduction. We ask these singers to be adept in a language with which they're not familiar or with which they're trying to get their feet wet with and get familiar. And then eventually we get the orchestra involved. So we get orchestral instrumental players who aren't necessarily exposed to this genre, very often exposed. So really everybody in some way in this department has their hands dipped into this cookie jar, which is opera.
So why did you pick Così fan tutte? It's such a complicated plot.
We pick the work each year really based on the student performers that we have and what we think would suit them the best. One of the things that was on my mind is how could we engage the students that we had? So we were able to double cast. There are 6 principal roles in Così fan tutte, 2 sopranos, mezzo soprano, tenor baritone, and bass or bass baritone. And I felt like we had that represented well and our student singers. So it was an exciting opportunity for them to do that. And because the subset of principal singers was smaller, this is why we chose in this instance, let's explore using a little bit of original language. That's new for us here at Luther. We explore that in the scenes programs, but normally in the full production in the spring, we stick with an English translation. So this is branching out a little bit for us. And when you have a dedicated cast of 12 singers who are really intensely studying that, this was a good opportunity. The marriage of the student talent we had, the work, and then the opportunity to explore the language. This was high on my list of things that I thought would make it an attractive option for this year.
What about fidelity and faithfulness and dedication and temptation? Do you get into any of that?
It's been an interesting journey with this piece. I think that's one of the reasons why this would not be the first work that would come to my mind when you think about the Mozart da Ponte operas. It's easier for me to swallow what happens in The Marriage of Figaro, interestingly enough, or even Don Giovanni to a certain extent, because the main character gets his comeuppance, our anti-hero gets his comeuppance at the end. And this is really quite a different type of work. It's the last Mozart da Ponte collaboration, and it's not based on an existing work already, whereas Marriage of Figaro and Don Giovanni come from other sources. So I think it's exploring some themes relevant to that day, but also to today. And though the traditional translation of Così fan tutte would be women are like that, I guess I've thought a lot about what the subtitle of this production is. It's Così fan tutte, ossia la scuola degli amanti. Either women are like that or the school for lovers. And I actually like that title, the school for lovers, quite a lot, because it's Don Alfonso, the main character, who points out, if all we have in our mind is the ideal version of someone, we are going to be disappointed. And as mature, loving adults, we're going to have to figure out what do we do when people don't live up to that expectation. The way that that plays out in this particular social sphere, we're setting it in Mozart's lifetime, late 18th century, in a specific place in Naples. That comes across in a certain way based on class and gender roles and stereotypes at the time. But I think the underlying kernel of truth in there is that without forgiveness, real human relationships are not possible, because we're all going to fall short of that ideal. And so initially, this was not a work that I would have been drawn to on those reasons, like, oh, I don't know if this is really what we want to do. This is the era of Me Too. Is this the right choice for us? I've come around to that way of thinking about it, that actually this is a really important message, and it's cast in an 18th century guise, but I think the moral is still quite clear and comes through beautifully, maybe in a way that it wouldn't come through in a work that's borrowed from another story. This is an original work in that way.
I really like the focus on the alternate title as well. I think when we start the opera with the idea of Così fan tutte, or all women are like that, I like to think that by the end of the opera, we have switched that word to Così fan tutti, or everybody is like that. In other words, everybody has their moments of infidelity or imperfection. And just as Andy said, there's this element of forgiveness, and we have to reconcile with the fact that we aren't always who we strive to be or live up to be.
Interesting things can happen at the end of this opera, whereas in the betrothed couples who are supposed to end up together, some productions say, maybe they don't. Maybe they do switch to the other. Maybe they fell in love and think that's, my previous choice was wrong and I've made a new choice. Or maybe we forgive and pretend like nothing ever happened. So I think we'll have a ripe opportunity to talk about that soon. I'm leaning toward leaving things a teeny bit open-ended, but I did ask the lighting designer to make sure at the very end that we get a sunrise. It's the dawn of a new day, so I assume we have to go a little bit in the direction of hope for those couples than the hope of reconciling. But I think, you know, the students have had the chance to think about some of these things, certainly in staging rehearsal. What does this mean? And how does this relate? How do we portray this in a way that's honest, both to the time and in a way we think audiences today would relate to?
Of course, my job is to get the orchestra ready to play the piece. But I admit I bring very early in the process, for a variety of reasons, I start to bring in little snippets of information about exactly what the opera is about and who the characters are and what they do and so forth. Still, my job is, even now, musical. I'm to put instruments together with voices. But to the orchestra, the drama is also, and the comedy is also, relevant, because Mozart's musical characterizations are always present. You know, it's a complex plot. And I agree, I'm thinking the whole plot could have been turned around. It could have been, all men are like that. It could have been the women who make a bet in the beginning that their sweethearts are faithful or not. And I think Mozart, not only was he a musical genius, he was a genius when it came to human nature. He understood people. He was a real, in that sense, a real grown-up. This is about human beings. We are creatures of passion, and the attractions that happen between people are a great mystery, and we never know quite why. Why am I drawn to this person or that person? And it's a very, in some ways, a very, very sophisticated study of human nature. So that's my amateur psychologist analysis of Così fan tutte.
One of the wonderful things that I am seeing my three colleagues help with for the students is to see how Mozart is such a craftsman about the emotion when they're not even speaking, and how the emotion is in the music. It's not always in the text. So the music is a creation of what's happening internally with the actor, and then the text is spoken. So just like we do when we speak.
And plus you have those two people that are kind of stirring the pot here. So you briefly said something about both the Italian and English. So why did you decide to mix things up?
I knew students would be excited to sing the music with orchestra in this piece in an original language. They were very excited about the arias and ensembles working that way. The challenge for us as musicians learning this music to sing it is that often the thing in between those moments with orchestra, sort of the musical dialogue, the recitative, that's a style that it takes a lifetime to perfect and to get fluid with. And usually that's a newer way of communicating for students. So we thought, in this case, let's leave that in English, help them have some of that fluidity. And then mostly the music then that is with orchestra, with one or two exceptions, mostly the music with orchestra is then in Italian. Thinking about the stage direction of that, there are some things I'm hoping the audience will go with us in this way. We'll have super titles for the Italian. I'm hoping there's some cues we can use with lighting and some in the motion of people on stage that will give the sense that, okay, this dialogue is more fluid. It's more in real time. It can happen this way. And when the orchestra is playing, we have a different sense of time. Things are suspended in some different ways.
We put a burden on our students by asking them to do this, do the arias and do the ensembles in Italian. But the reason for doing that was not necessarily to burden them or give them, you know, undue work, but was really to honor the language and the setting of the language. Anytime we deal with vocal music, we're trying to please two gods. We're trying to please the god of poetry, and we're trying to please the god of music. And when we go around Mozart and deal with a translation, we're basically skirting his effort at making those two gods agree. We also have very sophisticated singers here who are up for the challenge, and many of whom are thinking about graduate school, thinking about careers in performance, whether it's an opera or an art song. And so we want to instill a love of language and a love of pursuit of language, whether it's Italian or German or Swedish or, you know, whatever language they're singing in. We want them to know and to dig into the language and to know, you know, what they're singing about and to know the original intention.
So, Carla, tell us about the costumes. And there's a lot going on here with disguises and quick changes. And how do you make this all happen?
Well, we hired a fabulous costume designer who has built the show from ground up, really. Every piece is something that she has built, including the townspeople and the chorus. And it's really exciting. The fabrics are beautiful. And she has taken into consideration what the technical difficulties of the show would be. So, for instance, the gentlemen go into disguise, and so there are things that we have to do, like give them facial hair where they previously didn't have facial hair. And they, so that happens in the first act. Thank you, Mozart. And then doing things like hats and things like that. It's very physical at that particular time, so she has to, you know, secure things so that things don't fall off. The fabrics of these costumes are so delicious. One of the Fiordaligi said in her final fitting, "I feel like a pretty, pretty princess." They're really quite lovely.
So how can folks get tickets and more info about this production?
That's available online. Tickets.luther.edu is the place to look for tickets. Our performances are May 11, May 12, 2018 at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available online or by calling the box office. The number is also on the tickets.luther.edu website. And we're excited that things will be broadcast as well after the fact on Iowa Public Radio.
The star of the show will be Mozart. I must say, I've never ceased to be amazed at the beauty of the music. Even the smallest, most trivial moment. There's a moment toward the beginning of Act Two, when the two men sing sort of a serenade to the women, and it's just a little small little matter. But you know, I in a million years, I couldn't sit down and write something as beautiful as that 3-minute serenade. It's just miraculous, and for me, Mozart will be the star. It always is. His music is sublime, just sublime.
Thanks for today's Così Fan Tutte interview goes to IPR's Chris Fenton. To hear more from the entire interview, please go to the Iowa Arts Showcase page at iowapublicradio.org. And a big thank you to our Luther faculty, Andrew Whitfield, Associate Professor of Music and Opera Coordinator, Dan Baldwin, Head of the Luther Music Department and Director of Orchestral Activities, Nicholas Shaneyfelt, Assistant Professor of Music and Collaborative Piano, and Carla Hansen, who is the Luther Voice faculty and assisting opera director. Thank you all, and best wishes on your upcoming performance.
Thank you.